You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Friday, August 27th, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, the Orioles are now a winning baseball team once again. Of course, they broke the streak back on Wednesday night with their 10-6 win over the Angels. Now, they're close to starting a winning streak as they just crushed the Angels in the Thursday afternoon game. 13-1 victory for the Orioles as they take 2 out of 3 from the Halos. So we'll recap that game, get you the 5 things you need to know from the blowout Orioles victory. Then we continue to take a look at all the Orioles draft picks from the 2021 MLB draft. We're going to the 10th round here, and it is the power hitting outfielder Billy Cook, who the Orioles selected out of Pepperdine with their 10th round selection. And we are going to talk to Danny Wirth, who some of you may know as a former big leaguer, played parts of 6 seasons all the way up until 2016 with time in the big leagues, but is also an assistant coach and hitting coach at Pepperdine for the baseball program. And he joins us to talk about Billy Cook, his 4-year career at Pepperdine, where the power came from, and the other aspects of his game, his defense, his speed, and other things for Billy Cook. Then at the end of the pod, we will get you ready for the weekend series. Preview it as the Rays come to town, a team that has taken 15 of 16 against the Orioles so far this season. Can the O's change that and maybe get a winning streak going? We'll talk about all that and more on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join me every week to talk Orioles and get in on the action at Spotify Green Room. Changing the way we talk sports. So the Orioles, well, they looked like the completely different Orioles, to be honest. I mean, the win on Wednesday night was fantastic. You break the streak, you stop it at 19 losses in a row. But then what they did on Thursday afternoon was fantastic. The O's beat the Angels 13-1 in the final game of the series Thursday afternoon at Camden Yards. They take 2 out of 3 from the Angels in the series, and the O's are now 40-86 on the season. We're going to get you the 5 things you need to know from the Orioles 13-1 victory. And the first thing you need to know is that Keegan Aiken frankly looked like a completely different pitcher in Thursday's game. Even when he had success, and he did have his share of success in 2020 when he first came up, never did he look like this. Keegan Aiken's final line, honestly, one of the best starts put together by an Orioles starter in a long time this season. 7 innings for Keegan Aiken. He allows 1 run on 3 hits, strikes out 6, walks 2, allows 1 home run, takes him 92 pitches to get through it, and he lowers his season ERA to 7.26. And that is the most surprising part. You do not see guys who are lowering their ERA to 7.26 who also go 7 innings and allow 1 run. But Aiken was all over it, I won't say from the start, because he allowed a leadoff home run to Shohei Ohtani. That is how the day started for Keegan Aiken. Second pitch of the ballgame, Ohtani takes him deep for his league-leading 41st homer. And you think, oh boy, here we go again with Keegan Aiken. Then he proceeds to pitch 7 more innings without giving up a run. That was the only run that Aiken allowed on the day. And, you know, he did the typical Keegan Aiken blueprint. Fastball, fastball, fastball all day long. Of his 92 pitches, 60 of them were fastballs. That's 65% of the time he's throwing that four-seamer. It was right about at 92, but he actually pumped up the velocity today a little bit. Now, his average fastball velocity was pretty much on point with all season, but he ticked up there to 95 once or twice and was sitting around 93, 94, whereas he's usually around 92. So it was a little bit of a different Keegan Aiken at times in this game, which obviously helped him. He got 10 whiffs on the day, 10 swings and misses on 92 pitches. 8 of them came on that fastball. The other 2 came on the changeup. The fastball was in the zone a good amount. He got a lot of foul balls on that pitch to help him get ahead. But you just look at the stuff, and again, it wasn't super dominant when you dive into it. You know, the 10 whiffs is not a huge number, you know, especially coming with the fastball. Again, the 6 strikeouts is good over 7 innings, but when you get 7 innings, you'd like to have the K count maybe a little bit higher than 6 of them. And once again, I don't want to take away Keegan Aiken having one of the best starts again that the Orioles have had in months, but it wasn't a dominant 7 innings and 1 run. It was, he got some weak contact, he was able to jam some guys with some fastballs, and he pitched well, don't get me wrong, But a guy throwing 65% fastballs that are about 92 miles an hour and straight isn't always going to get it done. He threw 16 changeups, 14 sliders, and he dropped two curveballs in there. I mean, he barely used the off-speed stuff. And in terms of the changeup, he got two swings and misses. The slider, he was able to throw the slider for a strike fairly well. That was good at times, and that really helped him. But other than that, I mean, it was just Aiken kind of throwing more strikes and throwing better strikes when he was in the zone with his fastball. He was just kind of able to hit the corners more than he usually does. And, you know, it ends up giving him a little more strikeouts with the six. But what it really does is, at least if he can place that fastball well on the corners of the zone, which is what he did on Thursday afternoon, it's not still a big-time strikeout pitch. It's obviously his number one pitch, as we know. He throws a lot of fastballs. And we know it got him a lot of strikeouts when he led, you know, AAA in strikeouts back in 2019. But here's the thing about Aiken. If he can at least pinpoint that fastball on the edges, he's going to get pop-ups and weak ground balls and get guys to roll over. And that's what he did in the start. And that's the reason why he got through seven innings. And let me tell you, he was at 92 pitches. Brandon Hyde maybe could have sent him back out there for the eighth inning. I mean, to see what he's got at 92 pitches, just to see, you know, maybe let him pitch to another batter or two and see what he's got. See if he'd get through eight. But Hyde had not a rested bullpen, but it was, you know, he had Jorge Lopez to go to, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But for Aiken, I mean, give it to me again. Let me see it again from Keegan Aiken, and then we'll start talking about if it's sustainable. I think this next start is going to show a lot about Aiken and see if he can build off of this one. But the second thing you need to know from the Orioles 13-1 win, the guy I just mentioned, Jorge Lopez, made his second appearance out of the bullpen for the Orioles this season. Of course, his last one was on Sunday after he was moved to the pen. He threw a scoreless inning on Sunday. This appearance was even better. He finished out the game for the Orioles. O's only had to use two pitchers in this one, as he goes two scoreless innings, does not allow a hit, strikes out four, and his only base runner was a guy he walked in the eighth inning, threw 28 pitches on the day, and he looked good with the 4Ks, did Jorge Lopez. He looked really good once again out of the bullpen. This seems to be a good spot for him. You know, he went mostly fastballs between the sinker and the four-seamer. 22 out of his 28 pitches were fastballs, and you know, he dropped four curveballs and two changeups in there. I mean, he was basically throwing the fastball all day. He got four whiffs. The fastball was in the zone. The fastball was moving. The fastball was causing ground balls. That's what he did. And once again, he upped his velocity. His average velocity on the year, 95.2. His average velocity in this outing, 96.8. His max velocity, 97.5 miles an hour in this outing. As you see with a lot of pitchers, and as we thought we'd see from Lopez, he moves to the bullpen. He throws harder. The fastball moves more. He's going to be an effective reliever, at least for now, it looks like. And I like the way it looked from Jorge Lopez today. He's able to hit 98 a couple of times. You like to see that from the right-hander. Third thing you need to know from this one is Pedro Severino. Where in the world did that come from? We know the struggles that Severino has had this year. We know he's been an offensive threat somewhat, 2019 and 2020 with the Orioles. That has not been the case this year. And with the bad defense, the bad offense, it's been a tough year for Severino. But he had the big swing in this game. Came up with the bases loaded, 3-1 Orioles lead in the fifth. They already had two runs in that inning to take the lead. Severino, first pitch that he saw from the new pitcher, Jake Petrichka, grand slam out to left center field. Crushed a fastball, was ready for it, jumped on it. Second career grand slam for Severino. And then he follows it up. He comes up in the eighth inning, the other Orioles' big inning. Scored six in the fifth. They scored five in the eighth to put the game away. A two-run single from Severino in that inning. Now, those were his only two hits. He was 2-for-5. But a six RBI day was a season best and a career best for Severino. And he hits the grand slam as well. Give me more of this from Pedro. We know the defense is just not going to be there, but if he can get back to the offensive levels that he showed, you know, most prominently, you know, really in the second half of 2019, the first half of 2020, it makes him much more useful to have on the roster when you know he's not exactly going to give you the defense behind the plate that you need. Fourth thing you need to know from this game is that, you know, pretty much the whole offense was kind of there for the Orioles. I mean, they ended up with 13 runs on 15 hits. I mean, you know, you had Ryan Mountcastle two hits. Trey Mancini had two hits. Austin Hayes had two hits. Severino two hits. Ramon Urias had three hits. Everybody who started the game had a hit except for Santander, who's been the hottest hitter in this lineup, and he had an 0-for-5 with a strikeout. So it's nice to know that even without him hitting, as he has been in August, the Orioles had no trouble on the offensive end. And the fifth and final thing you need to know from the Orioles' 13-1 win over the Angels is that Brandon Hyde is kind of doing something interesting right now with his lineup. Because if you look at the Orioles' outfield and other guys, they are quietly pretty healthy right now. You look at Santander, you look at Mullins, you look at Hayes, Stewart, Mountcastle, and Mancini are all healthy. Hasn't been a lot of times this year where all those guys have been pretty much 100% and ready to go. And at all times, one of those players has to sit. Because between Mancini and Mountcastle and those guys, you know, you have first base, you have DH, and you have three outfield spots for all those players. And then there's six of them. That's only five spots, and none of them can really play anywhere else. So, you know, the last two nights, it's been DJ Stewart starting in the outfield, and it's been Austin Hayes on the bench. But, of course, as we know, on Wednesday night, Hayes comes off the bench, has the pinch hit, two RBI double, the big, you know, insurance runs in the eighth inning to snap the losing streak Wednesday. DJ Stewart starts again on Thursday, and Stewart, first two plate appearances, two walks. His third plate appearance, he laced an RBI double the other way to give the Orioles a 3-1 lead in the fifth. Then Austin Hayes comes off the bench for him to face the left-hander, and Austin Hayes finishes the game in left field, and he ends up with a 2-for-2. He doubles, he scores two runs, and it's kind of what they did on Wednesday night as well, because remember, Stewart had the two-run homer earlier in the game before Austin Hayes, you know, eventually came into the game, not directly for Stewart, but came into the game. And it's almost like right now, you know, you can't take Santander out of the lineup. He's red hot. Although Mullins has been scuffling a little bit, he's been your best hitter all year. You don't take him out of the lineup. Mountcastle's been swinging it really well. You're not going to take him out of the lineup. And with Mancini, you know, he gets a day off every now and then. He's starting to heat up a little bit as well last couple games, and he's just the heart and soul of the team. You feel like you need him in the lineup. So right now you're at the point where it's kind of Stewart and Hayes battling for the final spot of those guys. And frankly, you know, I don't know if either is taking the reins. Obviously, Hayes overall has had a better season, I would say, although the offensive numbers are actually closer than you think between the two, because Hayes has quietly kind of struggled this year. Not as much as Stewart has at times, and I would take Hayes over Stewart. But really, when you dig deep into the numbers, the OPS is pretty much the same between the two guys this season. And so it's kind of like a huge weapon for Brandon Hyde to have if he just has these two guys. And basically, you know, Stewart's going to play some, Hayes will start some, and then you can pinch hit one for the other in key spots, you know, if they have a better matchup. And if they're both hitting, the Orioles have a good problem on their hands where they have six players they want in the lineup and only five spots for them. And you'll take that, because it's the other way around is when they're injured or they're struggling and you have those five spots in the lineup and you have only maybe three guys you can trust and the offense looks bad in those other spots. So things have turned around here for the Orioles as they take the series, beat the Angels 13-1. They've now won two in a row, one more, and that's a winning streak. But in terms of the Orioles at the minor league level, we are going to continue to look at them, because just because there's a little success going on in the majors doesn't mean we're not focused on the minors, where all the good stuff is happening for the O's all season. And we continue here to look at the Orioles draft picks from this year's 2021 MLB draft. And today we move on to the 10th round selection. That is the outfielder Billy Cook, who the O's took out of Pepperdine. A four-year outfielder at Pepperdine who had a great senior season this year in 33 games. He hit 17 home runs. He had nine career home runs in about 90 games before that, 17 homers in 33 games. Homered at a rate of more than one homer every two games this season at Pepperdine. The power was great. He, you know, hit almost 300. He had an OPS at almost 1,100. He can play a lot of positions. He's kind of the whole package, and people felt maybe a steal for the Orioles getting him in the 10th round. So to tell us more about Billy Cook, Danny Wirth is going to join the podcast. He is a former big leaguer, but he is also an assistant coach at Pepperdine who works closely with the Pepperdine Waves hitters, including Billy Cook, for the last four seasons. And Danny joins us to talk about Cook's power surge this season, his approach at the plate, how his body has changed in his 4 years, all the positions he can play defensively, his speed on the field, and much, much more. So that's all coming up with Danny Wirth as we talk about Orioles' 10th round selection, Billy Cook, after this break. So we'll get to our conversation about Orioles' 10th round pick, Billy Cook, in just a second. But first, got to tell you about Built Bar and all the delicious flavors of protein bars. Now, they've got coconut, they've got cherry barcia, they've got raspberry, they've got mint brownie, double chocolate, pretty much everything across the flavor spectrum that you could want, Built Bar has it. And here's the really good thing about Built Bar. You know, It tastes like you're eating a candy bar when you eat a Built Bar, but it's also healthy. So it's a lot better for you. 17 to 18 grams of protein in each bar, calories ranging from just 130 to 180 every time you eat one, and only about 4 or 5 grams of sugar, and 4 or 5 grams of net carbs in each bar. And also Built Bar, the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team and all their medals that they have brought home from Tokyo. So go to BuiltBar.com right now and make sure to use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 15% off your first order of those delicious and nutritious protein bars. Again, it's promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, so we welcome Danny Wirth into the podcast. He is an assistant coach for the Pepperdine baseball squad, and he joins us to talk about another Orioles draft pick in Billy Cook. But first of all, Danny, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Connor.
So, you know, we bring you on to talk Billy Cook, who the Orioles took in the 10th round of this year's MLB draft, pick number 287 overall, an outfielder for your Pepperdine squad for 4 years. And I do want to start with his senior season this year, because that is obviously when the power came out in full force for him. 17 home runs in just 33 games. I mean, he was essentially hitting a home run every other day he went out there. What was that like to see and to have that, you know, big of a power bat in the middle of your lineup?
It was awesome to have. He got red hot down the stretch, and everyone was talking about it. A very fearful hitter at that time, and opened a lot of eyes, and it was a lot of fun on our side to see him finish out his Pepperdine career that way.
And you know, you said he got hot late. At what point in the season did he kind of kick it into the next gear?
Well, at the beginning of the season, he started off slow, and he was dealing with an oblique injury that might have slowed him down. And I think after we had a couple COVID breaks, unfortunately, where our team had to sit out probably a total of 3 weeks. And I think after the second time, it was a 2 week stint, we sat out. It kind of came at the perfect time because Billy was still nursing the injury. I think it gave him a lot of relief to have that downtime. And when he came back from that, he never looked back.
I did want to ask, kind of, what do you make of his stats from this year, where, you know, basically, you know, 90% almost of his extra base hits were home runs? Was that something about the ballpark, his pure power? What was that about, where, you know, he really didn't put up many doubles, but it was a lot of homers?
No, I think, I mean, our ballpark, our home field is a very pitcher-friendly field. We got the ocean breeze coming in, and, you know, Billy made it look small, but I think his approach at the beginning of the year, because he is so special of a talent, tools-wise, he knew he could hit a lot of homers, and I think he was trying to, and I think near that middle point of the season, we just got him back to hitting some low-line drives, having a singles approach, and just letting the homers happen if they happen, and that's kind of an adjustment that he made and committed to, and it was one that paid dividends down the stretch.
I did want to ask about his 2020, because, of course, you guys, like everybody else, cut well short in the season. You guys get 15 games in. He ends up with 4 home runs, and he was hitting .344. I mean, he was crushing the baseball and putting up, you know, career-high offensive stats. What kind of season do you think he could have put together had he had a full 2020?
I think he would have done something similar. He's so special. One of the strongest, fastest, most explosive guys I've ever seen in the game. Even in the pro, on the pro side as well. And I think in the 2020 season, he was scuffling. And I think the last half of the 21 season showed what he could do when he puts it all together. So, yeah, the 2020 season, he was consistent, but still wasn't reaching the heights that he could. And 2021, the last half, he put it all together.
And I know we've touched on this briefly, but, you know, he comes in and he played a lot as a freshman in 2018, never left the yard, though, that season, had 5 home runs the next year in 2019. Was he able to, like, you know, remake his body at all between that freshman and senior year that aided to the power increasing?
Well, he was always really gifted with strength and speed. Very interesting prospect for us right away. And he makes adjustments. He works really hard at everything, not just his swing, but in the weight room, as a person off the field. And so I think it was just continual work for him, and his work ethic was second to nobody on our team. And, you know, he just always kept on improving. And from day one as a freshman till the end, you know, he never stops working. So I think freshman year, yeah, he was a raw kid from Colorado, you know, not getting to play baseball maybe year-round like the rest of the kids in the country. And then, you know, I think just the college year-round, you know, fall season, then spring season, then going off and play summer ball, all that just accumulated over time and just snowballed for him and really helped him.
Did he ever in his 4 years, whether, you know, it was working with you or working on his own, was there ever tweaks or big-time adjustments he made to his swing at all in his 4 years?
Oh, yeah, we were always working on his swings. You know, there's always something that we could get better at, and we kind of have the approach here where we're going to work on one thing at a time. And, you know, Billy was always working, always trying to get better, always trying to maximize even his strengths. And, yeah, he's just a relentless worker, someone that you dream of coaching. So he was great.
Now he's already started his pro ball career. He's got 12 games in at the pro level between the FCL and low A with Delmarva Shorebirds. Already hitting right around 300, still waiting for that first pro homer. But of course you have, you know, spent time in Major League Baseball and in the minor leagues, and you kind of know the, you know, what it's like to be a pro player. Did you feel like he was one of those guys who was kind of, you know, ready to take that on after this year and after getting drafted?
Yeah, most definitely. He's ready for it. He's gifted. He wants it more than anything. Very passionate about, you know, reaching the major leagues and being a major contributor to a major league team one day. So, yeah, I just think he needs to go out and keep on working and finding his way and making improvements. And, you know, it's a long process, but I know he's going to do great.
And then just two more things for you. The first is I did want to ask about him defensively. You know, I know as an outfielder, where did he play most of the time for you guys, and where do you think, you know, he can play if you feel he can stick it, you know, potentially all three of those positions moving forward?
Well, he actually got recruited as an infielder, and freshman year he played third base. He played a little second base over his career as well at Pepperdine. So he could kind of be a super utility, but his speed and his arm in the outfield, you know, he tracks everything down. He has an absolute cannon from anywhere out there. And just the way our roster shuffled out the last couple of years, our team was better with him out there. But I think at, in the pro side, he could be a super utility. He could be a lockdown center fielder as well. I think he's going to show that.
Yeah, and the Orioles have been drafting a lot of those players, acquiring a lot of those players that can do that, and also a lot of the infielders that the Orioles have drafted over the past couple of years, they've tried to put in the outfield, and outfielders they've tried to move into the infield. So it's great for them that Billy is already kind of used to playing all around the diamond. And then the last thing, you know, just for Orioles fans to know, you know, you have obviously worked with him for a while now at Pepperdine. Kind of who is the person Billy Cook that the Orioles are getting into their system?
Oh man, they're getting an A+ person all around. He's a leader. He's a worker. He's a great teammate. You know, like I said earlier, you just couldn't ask for anything more as a coach. It's such a pleasure working with him over 4 years and seeing him grow. I think he's going to do whatever it takes, whatever's within his power to keep on getting better. Yeah, I mean, I love him. He's going to be a close friend of mine forever, and I'm always going to be here for him and whatever he needs. And, following his career, and I hope he just runs off with it and does really well.
Yeah, the hope is that as well. He's already playing well in the Orioles minor league system, as I mentioned, and the O's, you know, spent a 10th round pick on him, so they are obviously hoping for big things from Billy Cook. But Danny, thank you so much for joining us, giving us the little scouting report on one of the newest Orioles, and obviously as you are as well, we're hoping Billy can move through the system pretty quickly, and hoping we'll see him on the other coast up in Baltimore at some point soon.
All right, thanks for having me, Connor.
So we're back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first, got to tell you about betonline.ag, and it's that time of year again. It's all eyes are now turning to football. As teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all pro and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL Mega Contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor Contest, open now at betonline.ag. So head to the website or use your mobile device, sign up today, and you can receive a 100% welcome bonus, 100%. And be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo. Make a bet on opening night in the game between the Buccaneers and the Cowboys, and even if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using the promo code NFL100. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, and you can do it when you use the promo code LOCKEDON as well. So do it all over at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So my thanks again to Danny Wirth, assistant coach for the Pepperdine Waves baseball program, and also, of course, a former big leaguer. He was a second-round pick of the Tigers out of Pepperdine, where he played his college ball back in 2007. Made it to the bigs with the Tigers in 2010. Ended up playing 5 years in Detroit. Then he resurfaced 16 games with the Astros in the big leagues in 2016. That was the last time that he played in the big leagues. Kind of has an interesting connection to the Orioles in that Danny Wirth only hit 2 home runs in his career. That was in 332 big league plate appearances. He had 2 home runs. They both came in his rookie year in 2010, and that first big league homer came against the Orioles in Detroit and came off of Brad Bergeson. So he will obviously always have that connection to the Orioles, hitting his first home run against a guy in Bergeson who did have some pretty good starts with the Orioles back in the darker days. Never probably lived up to the full potential that he had, but was sneaky good and threw some complete games in an Oriole uniform. But thanks again to Danny Wirth for telling us about a guy who should be a future Oriole in, again, 10th round pick, the outfielder Billy Cook out of Pepperdine. Good power. I mean, I talked about it, you know, was hitting some homers before 2021, but man, 17 home runs in 33 games. And, you know, if he doesn't have the oblique injury, if his team doesn't miss some games because of COVID this year, I mean, the home run numbers could have approached 25 or better the way he was swinging the bat. Now, the walk numbers weren't big, just 12 in the 33 games as compared to 43 strikeouts. So, you know, we know that's part of his game, but he still hit .298, .366 on base, .1091 OPS in his senior season. Can play the infield, can play the outfield. He can run fairly well, and excited to see him hopefully get to the big leagues. Now, he's already played, I think, almost maybe one of the highest number of games played in terms of the 2021 draft picks already in the system. He's played 12 games in the Orioles system already, played 7 games in the FCL. He ended up going 6-for-21 with a couple of doubles, 4 RBIs, and 3 stolen bases in that time. Then he got moved up to Delmarva among, you know, the 31 promotions, the 15 players that went to Delmarva. Cook was one of them last week. Played in 5 games for the Shorebirds so far. He is 6-for-20 with a double, 7 RBIs, 3 walks to 5 strikeouts, and he's 3-for-3 stealing bags for the Shorebirds as well. So really great start to Billy Cook's professional career here at age 22. He'll be 23 in January, a native of Colorado. Of course, played his college ball at Pepperdine. Orioles took him with the 287th overall pick this year's draft. 6'1", pretty filled out, right-handed hitting outfielder. And, you know, Mike Elias could move him to the infield as well, as, you know, Danny Wirth talked about it. You know, he played some second, some third. He was recruited as an infielder until they kind of moved him to the outfield more so later in his college career. Definitely an exciting prospect to even some, you know, prospect people, J.J. Cooper of Baseball America being one of them, guys who have kind of like just brought up Billy Cook when being asked about, you know, which of the players from the Orioles draft kind of stand out as maybe some good value picks and stuff like that. So already some high praise for Billy Cook. But back to the major league level for the Orioles. They do continue to play baseball and have a chance to start a winning streak tonight if they could get it to 3 straight wins. That is a streak, according to Major League. But it's going to be a tough task for the Orioles as the first place Tampa Bay Rays come into Camden Yards. It is the final series of the year between the Orioles and the Rays. Rays coming in at 79-48 at this time of recording here on Thursday evening. They have a 4.5 game lead over the Yankees for first place in the American League East, Rays coming off an off day on Thursday, whereas, of course, the Orioles played the early game. But they did just sweep the Phillies in Philadelphia, had a good series, did Tampa. And as we know, the Rays have just bullied the Orioles this season. 16 matchups between the two. The Rays have won 15 of the 16 between the two teams so far this season. And the run differential, it is ugly. The Rays have scored 128 runs against the Orioles this season. Their next highest total, 82, that they've scored in the same amount of games, 16 games against the Yankees. 128 runs. The Orioles have 57 runs in that time. It is a plus 71 in terms of run differential for the Rays against the Orioles. Just in the season series so far. And the O's obviously can't make up all of that or anything close to that, but can try and get some wins against a team that has just absolutely dominated them all season. The only win for the Orioles against the Rays this year came at the Trop on July 19th when Spencer Watkins had that fantastic start for the Orioles, the best start of his career. He struck out seven batters against the Rays, and the O's won that game 6-1. That is the only Orioles win against Tampa this season. But this weekend, three-game set at Camden Yards, Orioles and Rays. It kicks off tonight with a 7:05 start. Shane McClanahan will once again face the Orioles. The hard-throwing 24-year-old lefty will make his 20th appearance for the Rays. He has a 3.63 ERA on the season. His last start came against the Orioles back on the 19th. Five innings, one run, five hits, eight Ks, and one walk for McClanahan against Baltimore. He also started at Camden Yards just back on August 7th, was good in that one as well. Seven innings, three runs, five hits, eight Ks, and one walk. McClanahan has been really good against the O's this season. His other start came at the Trop on July 20th against the O's. That was also five innings, one run, and seven strikeouts in that one too. He's faced the O's a lot recently, and he's been really good. We'll see if the Orioles can figure out the hard-throwing lefty. Matt Harvey will get the start tonight for the Orioles. It'll be his 26th in an Oriole uniform. He's got a 6.27 ERA on the season. His last start came against the Braves, 5 1/3 innings, four runs on seven hits, five Ks, and a walk. And the start before that was in Tampa, where he got hit around 4 2/3, five runs, five hits. Did have six Ks and just one walk in that one against the Rays. But overall, it is a team that has, of course, dominated the Orioles and has hit Harvey pretty hard, because Harvey's other start against Tampa, May 18th at Camden Yards, inning and 2/3, six runs, seven hits, one strikeout, one walk, two home runs allowed. That matchup does not sway well in the way of the Orioles. Then for the last two games of the series, at least at the time of this recording here Thursday evening, the Rays have not yet named a starter for Saturday or Sunday. The Saturday game is at 7:05. John Means takes the hill for the Orioles for his 20th start of the year. He's got a 3.50 ERA. His last start against Atlanta was pretty good. Six innings, three runs, four hits, five Ks, and two walks. And then, of course, his start before that was that really weird one in Tampa against this Rays team, where he went four innings, he allowed four earned runs, seven runs total on eight hits, but he also struck out seven and didn't walk anyone. And then we go to Sunday, where surprisingly, to be honest, Spencer Watkins is going to get at least one more chance in the Orioles rotation in the 1:05 game on Sunday. Watkins will make his 11th Orioles appearance. He has a 7.07 ERA in 42 innings this season, and he is coming off of just a disaster of a start against the Angels on Tuesday night. Two innings, eight runs, seven hits, three strikeouts, and no walks. And then, of course, he pitched at the Trop the start before that on the 18th, got hit around there as well. Four innings, four runs, eight hits, two Ks, two walks. I will say, if Watkins gets hit around again by the Rays on Sunday, that could be his last turn in the Orioles rotation. I could definitely see them just putting him back in the bullpen maybe for the rest of the year, the final month of the season, but Spencer Watkins on thin ice, especially as Alex Wells is waiting for a rotation spot. You have Chris Ellis on this team. Zach Lowther is making his way back. He made a rehab start in Bowie last night, so guys are trying to knock on the door, and you know, we don't really know what the status is of Bruce Zimmerman. He's still going to be out for a couple more weeks, but even if Bruce maybe will come back for a start or two at the end of the season, he's going to need a rotation spot as well, and Watkins just has not been bringing it lately, so pressure's on him on Sunday. But then we will be back with you here on Monday. We'll recap the weekend of Orioles action against the Rays, give you the three big takeaways from the weekend series. Hey, when we return, hopefully the Orioles are still winning games. Hopefully it's a five-game winning streak, and the Orioles are well on their way to 19 wins in a row right after 19 losses in a row. Then next week, we will continue getting you breakdowns on all these Orioles draft picks. We've only got a few to go as we will finish that up over the next couple of weeks. And of course, bring you all the Orioles action and transactions that come our way. But again, we'll be back with you on Monday. Until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.